And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain. Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. From class, the cults, and all the cheesy between, the movies are beef, the entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti. I'm joined once again by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? Today we've got a movie that had been unseen for years. Maybe it's a cult classic, maybe not, but it's The Monster of Piedras Blancas.
And we'll get to it right after this.
Famous Monsters of Hollywood magazine names it Shock Award winner, The Monster of Piedras Blancas. The Monster of Piedras Blancas, the world's most shocking monster, stalks its unsuspecting prey, feasts its eyes on the next victim to writhe in its slimy arms. The screen's most nightmarish beast. A claw-fingered, scaly-skinned, half-human crustacean, turning a lonely lighthouse village into a frenzied bedlam of blood-curdling horror. Never have you known such cringing terror, such drawn by love to the forbidden cove of the sea monster, then trapped in a torment of unendurable suspense. In the screen monsterama of a thousand incredible... See the movie named the most brain-paralyzing shock story of them all, The Monster of Piedras Blancas.
The Monster of Piedras Blancas was released April 22nd, 1959, with a 71-minute running time. You have a budget of $29,000, which I am willing to believe.
Oh, I've got my reasons for
I'm willing to believe
only
that.
Being $29,000.
Yeah. Your director is Irvin Berwick. Your producer is Jack Kevin. Screenplay by H. Haley Chase. You were distributed by, your production company was Van Wyck Productions. And then your distribution in the U.S. was Film Service Distribution Company, and over in the U.K. was Grand National Pictures. This movie is considered to be, for many years, maybe thought was lost. It is actually most famous for being in Famous Monsters of Filmland, known as it won its Shock Award winner. That was one of their, it was their big thing. They had a movie that they had pictures of, but no one had ever seen. You couldn't see it, so they would show, some of the stills from the movie, and it was their Shock Award winner. So it kind of had its own life without actually ever being seen, unlike The Creature Black Lagoon and, Dracula and Frankenstein and stuff like that. So our story opens. So the movie opens when the Sturgis, the lighthouse keeper, is seen leaving food in a dish for which turns out to be the creature, and then yelling at, which turns out to be the Rinaldi brothers, to stay off the rocks. The Rinaldi brothers are later found brutally murdered the next morning, right? So that leads us right to where we are. Kochek. Now, when they first said that, I thought they had Kolchek. I was like, he'd be Colt. There's no L. It's Kochek.
Yeah, it's Kochek.
Kochek. Yeah. Well, Kochek's is the name, it's his name of the store.
K-O-C-H-E-R-S.
Yeah. No, there's no S.
Or
no,
it's K-O-C-H-E-C.
So he's the storekeeper. He swears it's the monster year, Piedras Blancas, which is a very, I guess, a legend at this point. And Piedras Blancas is actually a real place in California. It actually was what was used. This was all part of the lighthouse was used and stuff like that. Actual lighthouse.
Well, yeah, that's, again, this is the key reason. This is at Morro Bay, which is a real place. To begin with, when the credits come up, there's no names. It's the lightkeeper, the girl, the boy,
They have names eventually. But
You only find out their names as the film goes on.
Right. They fill you in.
Yeah, but again, I've never seen the credits come up as, you know, the actor's name as the boy, the actor's name as the girl, right?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, you're discovering with the movie.
Yeah.
So, it takes the bold step of not including the audience in the movie. Anyway, so he swears it's the Mantra Pages Blancas, but no one believes him because it's a monster. Then no one even buys that. They think, like, it could have been the squall came up and they were somehow decapitated. So Dr. Juergens and Constable Mattson inspect the bodies and find that the heads were severed clean off and all the blood was drained out of the bodies. But they found no blood at the scene. But again, it's by the water, so I think, well, maybe it could happen. Sturgis's daughter, Lucy, she's called Lucy. She's called both in the movie, and her boyfriend, Fred, go to the beach, and then he winds up bringing her home. But Lucy then goes out to go night swimming. So Lucy works at the local bar. I guess it's a bar. I mean, it has a bar in it.
Yeah.
It must be a restaurant. This is a one horse town, folks. Like, kind of thing. So
one horse.
Yeah, and the horse might be dead. This is a very small town. So again, there's everything is literally next door to each other.
Let me get into it right now. Morro Bay is a real place.
Yeah.
There are no built scenes in the movie. They're all actual locations. The general store, this restaurant, they're all actual scenes because you never see anything else but the front entrance to them. And all they've done on a couple of things is taken probably whatever the owner's sign off and put up another sign.
Right.
But
not even that.
But it looks like it's you know.
No one had names going in.
Yeah.
So what does it matter if the guy's name is really Kolchik? You know, kind of thing. Like, you can change the name. It's not like a Pulitzer Prize winning novel where people would know who the person's name is.
Right. But again, it's not. There's nothing that was created. There were no sets on this thing.
Right.
Everything, including the lighthouse, and all the scenes were done
in the lighthouse.
So most of that $29,000, they must have rented the town for a day, and did all those things.
So. So while she's swimming, we see the creature's hand come up and grab at her clothes. This is the second time we see the creature's hand. We see it in the beginning, grab at the food. That hand should look familiar from the mole people.
Right.
Because it's the mole people hand there, you know, kind of thing. Lucy gets back to she also hears the breathing when she's getting dressed, and she heads back to the lighthouse where she tells her father she feels like someone's watching her, and that drives Sturgis into a rage. So later that night, the monster attacks Kolchek at his store. Kolchek had the door open because it was warm, so he left the door, and what happened is he winds up getting attacked and killed in there. You don't see that. You see the silhouette, but you don't see that. Like, you don't see it. Like, nowadays they would show him getting torn limb from limb. Like, so the following morning, they're holding the funeral for the Rinaldi boys, and a little boy is left behind because he doesn't go to the cemetery, and he goes into the store to buy candy, and he winds up discovering Kolchek's body. With the head decapitated, headless body, and then he must have a leg that's lame because he's running.
Well, it looks like he has a club foot.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, but I'm saying, but he's running up to there, and they all come back to the store, where they discover again that he's got no head and there's been no blood and anything else. But that's where they find one of the fish gills, they call it, right, sitting there, kind of thing. So Eddie, who also works at the bar next door, is tasked with putting the body in the freezer. Now, this is how small town this is.
What,
they put the bodies in the freezer where everyone's meat comes from.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, as this movie is unfolding, there are scene after scene after scene that just taxes your credibility. When the two Rinaldi brothers are dead and they find them on the beach, there's no ambulance. They bring them back to town in a wheelbarrow, and they put them in the There's no morgue. They put them in the meat freezer.
Yeah. With the ice room, as they call it. Yes, the ice room. Yeah, right. And it's so. So Fred and Fred, it turns out to actually be a scientist, or wants to be a scientist, and Dr. Jurgensen are trying to figure out that the fish, what the fish oil is from, and they figure out it's from the diprovipone. It's an old fish amphibious thing.
Try coelacanth.
It's not coelacanth. It's not a coelacanth, though, which is extinct. So they said there's no way they could have ever found this, and that maybe he had found it when he was out fishing. So now we get back. Sturgis is found by his daughter, laying hurt at the bottom of the cliffs, and his dog is missing. The doctor and the constable show up with Fred, and they get him back to the and then they return to town, where they find out a little girl has been killed. So now we're amping it up, because now you're killing children. It's not just the Rinaldi brothers who couldn't, you know, it's not fishing. It's not just Kochek, who is the town gossip. It's now a little girl is murdered, again, sans head. So Fred feels that Sturgis is hiding something from him, and he wants to have to do with the killings. Meanwhile, they go to find Eddie at the store, because Eddie was told to stay with the body, so no one like would run away with a headless torso, right? So Eddie's now missing. So now they're on the look for Eddie. So as he enters the ice room, the monster attacks, and it carries Eddie's head off in his severed hand. Now right here, we can stop for a second. This is the most famous scene in this movie. Yeah, this is what the movie's known for. This is what the still is. Literally, the mole people's hand holding on somehow, must have been glued on, because you can't, there's no dexterity in those hands, right, to Eddie's severed head. And that's why this movie is, this is exactly what this movie is known for. That's what the models always, when they were doing the half, this is what this movie is known for. It is known for that scene. The guy hits it with the cleaver, and he gets smashed in the face, like, the cleaver, you can see it wobbling as it goes and stuff like that, and that's fine. And I'm willing to accept all that stuff, because when he comes out of the closet, out of the ice room with the head, I can imagine the like seven people who ever saw this before this movie got lost, probably like, whoa, that was probably like, because you didn't see a severed head. Like, that was big time news. This is 1959. Remember, we are years away from Night of the Living, we're still almost a decade away from Night of the Living Dead, where you had the flesh eaters eating the people alive and that stuff like that. This wasn't seen. So that scene, I always love that scene. That to me is like the best scene in the whole movie. You don't see the whole monster. You kind of just see him kind of like, and he kind of moseying with his hand. It's not like he's like, you know, he's aggressively attacked. He's just kind of swinging it around like a handbag.
It was lunchbox.
Yeah, exactly. So Fred then goes back to the shore, finds the monster's feeding spot, and he joins the team searching for the creature. During the search, they find another severed head, just another one laying there in front of probably one of the Rinaldis there. And two other of the search party are attacked. Sturgis reveals to Lucy at this point that he had discovered the monster years ago. He's been feeding him fish and meat scraps to help keep the monster at bay. And he felt so lonely, and that having another living creature there who depended on him made him feel good again.
Right.
He had a daughter who was sent away
for 10 years,
but he's thankful that the giant killing machine, the prehistoric killing machine that's living up, that makes him feel good. The doctor and Fred deduce that the monster must rely on smell as his main method of finding food, because he didn't hear them coming in, which plays no part in any of this, because he then later hears Lucy making noise, not smelling Lucy. They decide to set a trap for the monster. They're going to get a big net. Sounds like the giant claw. Like Q, right?
Yeah.
Put on the big tops on top of the Chrysler Building. So,
Q was is in the early 70s. So
no, Q is 1982. What I'm saying, he's talking about putting the big top on top of.
Yeah.
Right. It's a big net. It's not that different a thing. You know, it's just funny how. But I'm just saying. Anyway, where are we? So the crew who are going to set the trap see that the light in the lighthouse is not lit, so they call there and no one answers. He goes, did you try the number? And literally he goes, yeah, it's 71 or whatever. He goes, dial it again. And I'm like, okay, how do you screw up 71? It's not like it's literally two numbers. You know, kind of thing. So that's when we see the monster. He breaks into the lighthouse and he carries Lucy off, which is weird because he doesn't kill her. But like
no, he carries her off
instead of killing her, but he's done to everyone else, including the child. He drops her when he hears Sturgis yelling. Again, hears Sturgis yelling, so he drops her on the beach and goes back to get even with Sturgis. He shoots the monster twice but doesn't stop it. He manages to trap the monster in the lighthouse, but it breaks through the steel door and throws Sturgis, or a close facsimile of just a dummy, off the side of the thing, all to his death. Fred realizes that the light hurts the monster, so he races upstairs to somehow fight against the monster. He has Lucy turn on the light. It blinds the monster, where Fred then hits it with the butt of a gun, and the monster, or the exact same dummy just wearing the costume, is flung off the top of the lighthouse all the way to the ground.
Yeah, but landing
In the water, thus leaving it over for a sequel. So, the end, question... No, they didn't do the question mark thing, but it'd be really funny if they did. They didn't even say the end. I think it said the end. It just comes up, the end. And then there's no credits, it's just end. Like, literally, we ran out of film, we're in the last centimeters, let's get it done. So, to call this movie a cult classic would be insulting the cult classic.
Exactly.
This movie was lost, and that's what it's known for. It's much more known for the famous Monsters of Filmland, stuff like that. That's really what this movie's known for. And I'm trying to think. I had a VHS of this years ago, and that's probably that's the level that the YouTube video is. So this is on YouTube for free. But the Blu-rays look really nice. They did a really good job cleaning it up.
Yeah.
It's just that you can't, improve on acting. You can't improve on, like what they did. Again, everything looks real because they're all real sets. I mean, it's not sets. Right. They're real setting. And again, why pay for something when you can just shoot it? This is the Hideous Sun Demon all over again. Why pay for a water tower when we can use the water tower? Why pay for a barn when we can use a barn,
Well, so. The thing is, though, but the Hideous Sun Demon is light years a better movie than this.
Well, yeah, and it had a better script. I had to write this description because literally on anywhere online, the description is four lines. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, do I really have more than four lines to say? I really just wrote down what happened.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching
there's no story.
When I was watching this, there are a number of scenes that I think were derivative of other movies they literally brought in. Let me go through a few of them. There, when Lucy and Fred go to the beach, they both come out of the water and they embrace on the sand and the water
from here to eternity.
Okay, I
said that when I watched it. I go, oh my god, from here to eternity. I love from here to eternity.
Your mother was watching this with me the other night, and she said, why are they ripping off from here to eternity? I said, maybe that's, but it gets a little better when you, and she is, you can see that she has nothing on. She's just got this like towel. But when she goes out at night to do the midnight swim, when she comes out of the water, it's murky, but you cannot see that she has anything on. So it's there. It's a nude scene. That's
not nude.
Yeah. No, that's just implied. Okay.
But how's that ripping off something else?
No, this is a monster movie.
Who are you watching this movie? 12-year-old boys are watching this movie, Dad. They got to have a severed head, a nude lady. I mean, check some boxes. They killed a dog. Killed a kid. Hit all the Chris Tyler things. You got a naked lady, a dead kid, dead dog. Chris Tyler loved this movie already.
Yeah. Well, the thing when the little girl is killed, it's reminiscent of
he's carrying her. Yeah. Well, but he doesn't drown her. But he's carrying her down the street.
Just like in a movie.
So you have a movie that literally is like you're basing a creature to look like the Creature Black Lagoon in a sense, right? It's not like he's literally kind of looks like a version of Creature Black Lagoon. His head doesn't, but the body does. Then you basically took so they used existing molds from the feet from the Metalula mutant to make his feet, right? So they did that. They also took the oversized hands from the mole people and used that. Like this is not a movie that this is made on the cheap. This is Roger Corman 101, kind of thing.
No, but Roger Corman. Roger Corman would, I don't think, would be caught dead making this movie it's done.
Have you seen Attack of the Crab Monsters?
Yeah, there's more to a Roger Corman movie than this.
Early Corman was like this. It was light and get away. It was like, how can I film this? And like, literally, give me 20 grand and a weekend, I'll give you a movie. Give me 40 grand in 2 weekends, and I'll give you a good movie. Yeah. That's how you eventually got the Edgar Allan Poe movies, where they were like $100,000. So the stuntman, the actor who wore Pete Dunne, the bruiserweight, who's a wrestler, Pete Dunne back then. He doubled as the bartender in the character, one of the scenes. Again, it's just, you know, right. Everybody. And then later on, parts of the rubber moss suit showed up in a TV show, Flipper. It was an episode called Flipper's Monster, which was directed by none other than Rico Browning, who, of course, played the Creature Bakugan, which is kind of funny. Universal gave him a great deal of unofficial cooperation in this production, right? Since, obviously, they're going through a period of, like, Universal had their time when they were down. Movies, like, after the monster boom, and then you had, like, the Adam Costello and stuff like that, Universal kind of went through a time when they weren't making A pictures all the time. So they kind of unofficially helped him make this film. And again, with a budget of $29,000, it's kind of hard to, you know, so.
There was one other reference to a movie that I just wanted to bring out. And this concerns the handicapped boy. They're having the funeral, and the mother tells him to wait in town. He didn't need to go down to the cemetery. And so as he looks down on the ground, and there's a quarter on the ground. So the first thing he does is he looks around and then puts his foot over it. And then he bends down and picks up the quarter. And then that's when he decides to go get candy. Now, it's a throwaway scene, but it reminded me of, as he goes in, and when you watch the movie, watch this scene. There's a hand of bananas, and he's about to take one. And then he stops. This reminds me of Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. He said, when Costello almost goes to take an apple. He doesn't take it.
He goes, I bet he counted him. And he walks back in. And
right.
Like,
but see, what I'm saying, all these little things.
But that's nothing, Dad. That's nitpicky. He's going to grab a banana. He goes, no, wait, I'm going to buy candy. That's what that said. Okay. That's not him. That's not them ripping off Abbott and Costello. That's literally him saying.
No, not ripping off, but I think it was just like it was From Here to Eternity.
From Here to Eternity was blatantly obvious. But From Here to Eternity has been ripped off a million times, right? That's not a ripoff of that. I think it was him saying, but I don't want
that.
That was my interpretation. So that little boy who's Wayne Berwick, and he worked for Cheap because he was the son of director Irvin Berwick. And the godson of Harmon, who is the what's his name?
Well, he worked for that quarter.
Yeah, John Harmon, who works in the movie. He was his godson. So, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say about this film, folks. It was released again on VHS back in the day by Republic Pictures back in '98. That was the one I picked up. The Blu-ray and DVD came out back in 2016 by Olive Films. I actually got Dad a copy of this for Christmas. Again, once it came out, I bought it as soon as it came out, but it came out and it's known for, this movie's known for what it is. In fact, on the back of the Blu-ray, if you look right in the back there, there's the scene where he's looking at the head, kind of looks like a very Shakespearean scene. That scene's not in the movie. There's no scene of him kind of looking at the head there. But that's the scene, that's the picture that's in Famous Monsters. That's the picture that's in the all the monster books from back in the day. That's what it is. It's a movie where there's not a whole lot about it. It wasn't seen a whole lot. It's like, again, The Hideous Sun Demon, which was never seen much, you know, kind of thing. And it's a movie that it didn't play much. And it wasn't like one of those, this played with this and played with this, very famous. So what wound up happening was it kind of just became lost, so to speak, you know, kind of thing. And now, so years later, they found it and they put it out. And again, I could say the Olive Film did a good job of cleaning things up. They do a great job. They're like Arrow and they're like Shout Factory. And
well,
stuff.
You know, but again, this production company was so small that it's very possible that the film stock was lost.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, they had to find it to do this.
You're not talking about that this was 20th Century Fox or MGM or something like that where they've got a vault where all the films would go in, and whether they're being shown again or not is one thing. I mean, this could have been in the trunk of some guy's car.
Right, what I'm saying is, but they had to find something to go from because there's no way you're working from a VHS.
Right.
So someone had an original of this film to work from to create a Blu-ray that looks as good as, clean.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is the Blu-ray is so clean, you can clearly tell the scenes that are day for night and the things like that are shot that way. Right. When they're shooting day for night on a Blu-ray and it's very clean, you're like, oh, this is day for night. I can see the filter on top of it. So.
Yeah.
But again, folks, it's a movie that if you haven't seen this, it's worth checking out. It's free on YouTube. Yeah, so you can definitely go watch it for free, and you just type in Monster Pages Blancas, and it'll come up. It says it, and then has like a German title after it. There's no subtitles. It's just the movie straight up, right from the VHS. Well worth the time to go watch. At 71 minutes, you've done things worse for 71 minutes than watch this movie.
The thing is, what I found with this, it's typical of movies like this that they don't have enough time to flesh everything out. There's a very cavalier attitude towards the dead people in this movie.
Stick them in the meat locker.
I mean, but they, you know, the doctor especially, he's so full of himself. If you watch this movie, he's always got a smirky smile on his face that he knows more than anybody else, or he's the voice of reason. And it's difficult to accept the fact that there's five killings here. Nobody says, they talk, well, we got a monster and we've got five murders here. Nobody decides to call the state police. They're going to be able to do it on their own.
They can handle themselves.
Well,
they can't really. It's all handled.
I mean, then there were other. There's one scene in there where Sturgis gets hurt. He's fallen down the cliff.
Right, the cliff. Yeah.
And they drag him into his house, and they put him on the couch. And Lucy says, "Anybody want a cup of coffee?" Well, I timed it, folks. It was 11 seconds later. She brings out a tray with four cups of coffee in their saucers. And there was no cut. They kept the camera on Sturgis and the doctor and the constable and Fred. And it's 11 seconds later. She's got the coffee.
She's ready to go. Set. So and, all right. So I'm just saying, and there's not much else we say about it. We do have an email, so let's read the email.
You want to do that?
Yeah, let's read the email. I'm saying, well, what else you got? Anything else about this you need to say? Like, I mean. Your closing shots can be after the email. I mean,
well, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, okay, here we go. So the email is from our good friend of the show and loyal listener, Jack Bond. Here we go. It says, "Doing the werewolves outside of London. I was one of those who ignored dog soldiers for the longest time. Someone paired it and let the right one in as modern werewolf and vampire movies worth watching. So I know it was 2008 or later. Thanks for going into Neil Marshall's body of work as well as worth following. If you guys did it on the vault, the Descent episode, I wasn't paying attention. We did. We actually did that. That was my freak's choice last time. I got to pick one, which is we did the Descent. And again, the Descent and Dog Soldiers to me are two of the best horror movies to come out in the last 20 years.
Yep.
So if you go back and listen to the Descent, folks, on the vault. Just to let you know, it's not quite as kid-friendly as Dad and I are here. There's some adult language being used. But we definitely cover the movie, and that movie is not for little kids if they're scared of anything, because that movie's scary. If you want, you can tell the guys that watched The Descent and Trick or Treat and found a DVD of Pumpkinhead last Halloween. So, The Descent and then Trick or Treat, which is the movie that... I forgot his name. The one with Sam, the little... the one with the anthology. We covered both of those, and then obviously you and I covered Pumpkinhead on here. I do wonder if a lot of horror is put in the stockroom and brought out seasonally, like Christmas albums, which is we know is true, actually, because there's a lot of the same movies and stuff. They do dump off some of their overstock, but like Walmart for sure definitely has movies in the back. Owning the DVD takes the time pressure off, and I haven't watched Pumpkinhead yet. Signed, Jack. Well, and I know, again, who had, I mean... Time is always of the essence. I mean, we all are, busy for time. Pumpkinhead's one we covered a while ago. And I'm glad that there's movies that, to me, even though it's a movie I grew up seeing as a kid, maybe some of the people who haven't seen it can get a chance to watch it. Like, to be honest, Haley's seen Dog Soldiers at least twice, kind of thing, just from it being on. And she knows, oh, it's this movie with the werewolves and the machine guns and whatever kind of thing. So she hasn't watched The Descent yet, though. That's a little intense for her.
Yeah.
Although she watched Shaun of the Dead with you the other day. Which was, I love that movie. And that's one of my favorite zombie movies of all time. I mean, she doesn't even care. She loves that movie for just certain parts of it.
Yeah. I mean, but it's funny in spots.
Oh, the movie's hysterical. But but to me, those kind of modern movies that people kind of overlooked, kind of thing. And Dog Soldiers definitely falls in that level. People kind of assume it must not be good because it was, quote unquote, a sci-fi original, even though we know it wasn't. It just was produced by sci-fi originals here as for TV. So thank you very much, Jack, for writing in. Folks, if you want to write in, we'd love to hear from you. Even if it's like you're rediscovering a movie you haven't seen in years or a brand new thing, something along those lines. So, all right, Dad, what do we have else about the Monster Pages Blancas before we talk about what's coming up next month, the end of this month, well,
actually,
Halloween?
That, This I was not. I mean, it was only 70 minutes, so I was happy that it was over with quickly. The ending of the movie is just plain stupid. He is a sea creature, and it's not like they riddle him with bullets and he's dead when he falls. He falls not onto the cliffs, which could break his bones. He falls into the water. I mean, he's just going to swim away. And so now they're happy as pigs in slop. Well, we got him.
Yeah, right? Well, okay, but...
No, but I'm saying it's movies like this that, I mean, I'd like to review them with you and what have you. But this was one that if we never did do it, it wouldn't have bothered me one way or the other.
Well, it's I gotta famous tell, for being lost. Well, I gotta, and the famous right, for its effort.
But I must tell you this. It was a nice night. I mean, we watched it. It was late in the afternoon. I was watching. Your mother was sitting there, and she was doing whatever she does on her tablet. And I said, look, this is... And I told her that you and I were going to review this. So she put her tablet down, and she watched the movie. She was howling. I mean, she had a good time watching this movie. So if that's what it takes sometimes to review and come up with something, I'm more than happy to do that. I'm just glad, like I said, I'm glad it wasn't an hour.
Yeah, it could be worse. You could have had to watch Hereditary again.
Yeah.
Because, good God, that's horrible. The only thing worse than Hereditary is the new Suspiria. And both of those clocking at 2 hours and 2.5 hours. And then when you're done, folks, you would wish you had been thrown off the lighthouse, just like Sturgis and the monster. So, what are we doing next? So you think, like, what's coming up? So what's coming up is the Halloween movie. Now, I know we tried to do multiple movies certain months and stuff, but we always managed to get a Halloween episode. And for Halloween... sometimes we're looking at, like, we're trying to decide where movies should fall. We looked at, like, what's a movie kind of that's definitely family friendly, a movie that you might actually see on either TCM might show it. Again, their list came out and stuff, and they have all kinds of weird movies, but this was on last year. And the one I was thought about was, let's do The Mummy's Curse, which is the final of the Mummy movies. I know we haven't covered the middle two, but this one's important because, again, it's an anniversary year and stuff like this was from 44. So, we're going to talk about The Mummy's Curse. So that's where you get to see Lon Chaney once again wrapped up, stumbling around the set because he's a mummy, not because he's drunk. So that will be for the end of the month. Again, anything, folks, you want to write in, let us know. We'd love to hear from you if you have suggestions or you have rediscovered a movie or something along those lines. Let us know. So until next time, folks, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo. Once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.com. www.theatrusblancas.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?